gesturing to the arm of the couch beside her.
Sorry I don't have chairs and stuff. I never meant to live here long term, John explained nervously.
How long have you been here?
Charlie's familiar voice was like tin.
John sat down beside her.
Since everything. This is where I lived when I first came here.
Oh. She glanced around the room again. I guess I don't remember it.
You never saw it, he said, unable to keep the coldness from his voice.
Jessica shot him a warning glance, and he took a deep breath. Charlie began scanning the room again. She stared straight ahead, her face taking on a look of concentration. Her eyes swept up and down the room in strokes, her head and torso slowly turning until she was looking almost directly behind her. In a second, she would see the gap behind the couch.
Charlie, I had fun the other night, John said quickly, forcing himself to mean it. Do you want to have dinner again tonight?
She turned back around, looking surprised. Yes, of course. That sounds great, John. Same place?
Same place. Around 7?
Sure. Great, Jessica declared and stood. Anyway, I have to go, she said. Want to walk out with me, Charlie?
She glanced nervously at John, and he got up quickly. I can give you a ride if you need one, he volunteered. I know you said you were walking.
Thank you, Jessica mouthed from behind her back. No, Charlie said. I think I'll keep walking. I'm not parked too far away. It's really nice outside.
Okay, then, John said.
Charlie moved gracefully across the living room and let herself out. Jessica let out a long breath like she'd been holding it. They went to the window and, silently, they watched the imposter go until she had disappeared around a bend in the road. What if she comes back? Jessica said. I don't want you alone with that thing, she finished, practically spitting the last word.
John nodded in vigorous agreement. I don't want to be alone with her either, he said.
Jessica looked thoughtful for a moment. I won't be gone long, she said. We need help, and if you don't think Charlie should go to the hospital, then the hospital has to come to her.
Marla?
Marla. And with that, she went to the door quickly. John walked out with her and watched uneasily as Jessica got in her car and drove off. Then he went back inside and shut the door, locking and bolting it. A lot of good this will do, he thought as he slipped the chain into place.
Charlie, he called softly.
He didn't expect an answer, but he wanted, felt almost compelled, to talk to her.
Charlie, I wish you could hear me, he went on, going to the bedroom closet and pulling out all 2 of his other blankets. I think it's safer for you to stay where you are than in the bedroom.
He pulled the couch a little farther from the wall, trying to figure out how best to make her more comfortable. At a loss, he grabbed a pillow and leaned down, reaching to remove the blanket that covered her face.
Sorry, I've only got the 1 pillow, he said, trying not to lose his balance.
It's okay, came a muffled murmur from beneath the blanket, and John fell back, tumbling over the seat and barely catching himself before his head hit the floor.
Charlie? He cried, then lowered his voice as he climbed back up. Charlie, are you awake?
There was no answer. This time he did not try to climb into the space behind the couch, and bent over to see. She was stirring, just a little.
Charlie, it's me, John, he said, his voice hushed but urgent. If you can hear me, hold on to the sound of my voice.
He stopped as she sat up and pulled the blanket off her face. He stared down at her, as astonished as the moment when he first saw her.
Her face was red, and her hair was sticking to her skin after being under the blanket. Her eyes were barely open. She blinked rapidly in the light, looking down and away. John leaped up and rushed to shutter the front window blinds. He closed the bedroom door and pulled the kitchen curtains. The apartment, never bright at its best, was nearly dark. He hurried back to Charlie's hiding place, grabbed one end of the couch, and pulled it out farther, enough for him to crawl behind with her. She was still sitting, leaning against the wall, but she looked limp, like she wouldn't be able to do it much longer. He reached out to steady her, but when his hand touched her arm, she made a distressed, high-pitched noise, and he drew back instantly. "Sorry, it's me, John," he repeated, and she turned her head to see him. "John," she said, her voice thin and rasping. "I know." Her breathing was ragged, and talking seemed to take effort. She reached out feebly with one hand. "What do you need?" he asked, searching her face. She reached out farther, and then he understood. He took her hand. "I won't ever let go of you again," he whispered. She smiled faintly. "Could get awkward," she whispered. She opened her mouth as if to go on, then sighed, shuddering. John scooted closer, alarmed. "What's—" She took another breath. "Wrong with me?" She finished in a rush. She opened her eyes, looking at him plaintively. "How do you feel?" he asked, avoiding the question. "Tired. Everything hurts," she said haltingly, her eyes drifting shut, and he clenched his jaw, trying to keep his face neutral. "I'm trying to help you," he said finally. "Look, you have to know. There's someone, something, out here impersonating you, saying that she is you." Her eyes snapped open, and she squeezed his hand suddenly. She was alert. "She looks just like you. I don't know why. I don't know what she's after, but I'm going to find out. And I'm going to help you."
"Afton,"
she breathed, her voice barely audible, and John quickly reached over the couch to grab the pillow he'd brought.
"Can you lift your head?" he asked,
and she did, slightly, letting him slide the pillow into place.
"We know it's Afton," he said, picking up her hand when she was settled again.
She squeezed it lightly.
"I have one of the chips, Afton Robotics. Charlie, I've got this. Clay's helping, and Jessica, and we're getting Marla to help you get better. It's going to be okay. Okay?"
But Charlie had drifted back into unconsciousness. He had no idea how much she had heard or understood. Her hand had gone limp in his own.
"Someone that looks like me. Never let go. John?"
Charlie struggled to order her thoughts. Things that had made sense a moment ago were losing their shape, drifting out of reach in a dozen directions like petals on the water.
"The door."
"It's going to be okay," John said,
but she didn't know if he said it in her head or in the world. She felt herself slipping back into the dark. She tried to hold on, but the exhaustion was weightier than she was, pulling her inexorably down with it. Charlie glanced at the door again. "He's late, or I'm early." She picked up the fork in front of her and ran her thumb over the smooth metal. The tines hit her water glass with a clear ding, and she smiled at the sound. She hit the glass again.
"How much does he know?"
Charlie struck the glass again, and this time she noticed several other patrons turning to look at her in confusion. She smiled politely, then set her fork down on the table and folded her hands in her lap. Charlie took in a breath and composed herself. As John approached the restaurant, he could see that Not Charlie was already there. She had changed her clothes. He hadn't really registered what she had been wearing before, but now she had on a tight, short red dress. He would have remembered that. He stopped on the sidewalk, just out of her sight, steeling himself. He couldn't get the other image out of his mind, the painted face with the soldering line splitting it down the middle. Charlie was sitting back in her chair. There was nothing in front of her but a water glass. She had ordered food when they last met here, but John couldn't picture her actually eating it. He couldn't remember noticing her not eating either. "Stop stalling!" came a crackling voice from his waist, and he jumped. He extricated the walkie-talkie from his jacket pocket and turned away from the restaurant before speaking into it, just in case Not Charlie looked out. "I'm not stalling," he said.
"You shouldn't be able to hear us," Jessica's distorted voice reminded him. "Did you tape the button down?"
"Right, hang on." John examined the walkie-talkie. The tape he had placed over the button to transmit had come loose. He replaced it, flattening it down against the uneven surface with his fingernail. He slipped the device back in his pocket and went inside. John glanced briefly around the restaurant as he entered. Jessica and Carlton were huddled together in a high-backed booth, out of Charlie's sight.
"Can you both still hear me?" John whispered.
Carlton's hand raised above the back of the booth momentarily with a triumphant thumbs up, bringing a real smile to John's face. John turned his attention back to Charlie, who had not yet noticed him. She lifted her head abruptly from the menu as he approached the table, as if sensing his presence. She flashed him a bright smile.
"Sorry I'm late," John said as he sat down.
"That's usually my line," Charlie joked, and he grinned uneasily.
"I guess so."
He looked at her for a moment. He had rehearsed things to say, but his mind had gone blank.
"So, I heard you and Jessica visited that old ghost town." Charlie giggled. "What's that place called again?"
She leaned in and rested her chin on her hand again.
"Ghost town?" John said unevenly, trying to keep his expression neutral.
It took everything he had not to turn and look at Jessica and Carlton behind him. Charlie was looking at him expectantly, and he took a sip of water.
"You mean Silver Reef?" he said, setting down the glass carefully.
"Yes, I mean Silver Reef."
She was smiling, but her face looked tight, like there was something ravenous waiting just below the surface.
"That's a strange place to go, John."
She cocked her head slightly. "Just out seeing the sights?"
"I've always been a history buff. The gold rush."
"Silver,"
Charlie corrected. "Silver, yes, that too. Just fascinating times in history."
John was tempted to turn and see if Jessica approved of his reply, or if she was scrambling out of her seat to flee the restaurant.
"You didn't know that about me, did you?"
He straightened his posture.
"I love history, historic towns, places."
He cleared his throat. Charlie picked up her water glass and drank. She set it down so he could see the red lipstick mark she left. John drew back slightly and looked elsewhere, searching for anything he could lock eyes with but her.
"Why were you there?"
Charlie asked, recalling his attention.
"I was..."
He started, then paused, taking a moment to gather his thoughts.
"I was looking for an old friend," he said, his answer calm.
She nodded, then met his eyes. He blinked, but forced himself not to look away. He had seen eyes like those before. Not the madness of Springtrap, or the uncanny, living plastic of the other robots, but the stark, brutal gaze of a creature bent on survival. Charlie was looking at him like he was prey. "Did you find your old friend?" she asked, her tone warm and out of place.
"Yes, I did," John said, not flinching from her stare.
Charlie's eyes narrowed, the facade between them growing thinner by the moment. John leaned forward on his crossed arms, resting all his weight on the table between them.
"I found her," he said in a low voice.
There was a brief flare of something on Charlie's face, surprise maybe, and she leaned in closer across the table, mimicking his pose. John tried not to flinch as Charlie's arm slid closer to his.
"Where is she?"
Charlie asked, her tone as soft as John's. Her smile was gone.
"I don't know what it will take to show these people what you really are," John said, "but I can try all sorts of things before you make it out that door."
He grasped his soda glass, not looking away from her.
"I'll start with this glass of soda, then I'll try a chair over the back of your head, and we'll go from there."
Charlie tilted her head, as though taking in his posture. He knew his hand was twitching, and his face was red. His heart was racing. He could feel his pulse pounding at his throat. Charlie smiled, then stood and gently leaned over the table. John set his jaw, keeping his eyes fixed on her. Charlie kissed his cheek, placing a hand on the side of his neck. She kept it there as she moved away, watching his eyes. Charlie smiled, her fingers resting on his pulse for a scant moment before letting them drift away. John snapped back in his seat as if she'd been holding him in place.
"Thank you for dinner, John," she said, the words sounding almost giddy.
She slowly let her hand recoil, as if relishing the moment.
"It's always so wonderful to see you."
She turned away, not waiting for a response, and went to pay the bill. There was a long pause.
"She's gone."
John's voice came over the walkie-talkie. Jessica looked to Carlton. He seemed slightly in shock, staring after Charlie like he'd been hypnotized.
"Carlton!" Jessica hissed.
He snapped out of it, shaking his head.
"She looks hot," Carlton said.
Jessica reared back and slapped Carlton as hard as she could.
"You idiot! You're supposed to be watching his back, not watching her butt. Besides, she put your father in the hospital."
"No, no, I know. Very serious."
He trailed off, obviously distracted.
"Why did I even bring you along?"
Jessica scooted out of the booth and got to her feet clumsily.
"Where are you going?" Carlton asked.
"I have an idea. Stay here."
Jessica sighed.
"You take my car."
Carlton called after, but she didn't stop to answer, merely threw her car keys behind her. Carlton made his way over to John's booth.
"Hey, are you okay?"
John didn't turn at the sound of Carlton's voice beside him.
"No, not really okay."
John leaned back in his seat, looking up at the plaster ceiling, then finally turned to look at Carlton.
"Where's Jessica?"
John asked instantly.
"I'm not sure. She ran out."
Carlton gestured toward the parking lot, and John turned just in time to see Charlie pull out onto the road and drive away.
"She did something stupid, didn't she?" John said wearily.
Carlton met his eyes, then they both ran for the door. Jessica kept low and snuck to the back exit of the restaurant. She could see Charlie was still standing at the front desk taking care of the bill. Jessica slipped out the back door and ran around the perimeter of the building, her high heels clacking on the sidewalk. She yanked them off and threw them into the bushes, then kept running, barefoot.
"Jessica, what are you doing?"
she muttered to herself. As she rounded the corner of the building into the parking lot, she spotted Charlie's car and made a beeline for it. The front door was unlocked. Jessica quickly popped the trunk, shut the door, and slipped inside, not closing the trunk lid all the way. A minute later, there was noise from inside the vehicle, and Jessica strained to listen. It sounded like voices. No, a voice, she realized after a few minutes. Charlie was talking, but there was no one answering her. Jessica concentrated, trying to isolate the sounds, but she could make out nothing. Whatever Charlie was saying, it was unintelligible from the trunk. Jessica balanced herself carefully, trying to lay as flat as she could while bracing her arm in the air to hold the latch of the trunk. If she didn't hold it tight enough, it would visibly bounce and Charlie would notice it. But if she pulled it too close, the trunk might shut, and she would be trapped. After about 10 minutes, the car stopped short. Jessica was thrown back against the wall, almost losing hold of the latch. Regaining her balance, she held very still, listening. The driver's side door opened, then closed a moment later. Jessica heard the faint sound of Charlie walking away, crunching over gravel, then silence. Jessica sighed in relief, but did not move. She began to count.
1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi,
she breathed, barely a whisper. There was no sound but her own hushed voice as she counted all the way to 60, then stopped and scooted closer to the trunk door. She gently eased her grip of the trunk handle, letting the hood rise slowly. The car was parked in the center of a large parking lot, illuminated impossibly bright by street lamps. The light was tinged with red, and Jessica turned to see a large neon sign directly overhead, flooding the lot with brilliant reds and pinks and blocking her view of anything beyond. The air buzzed loudly with the noise of what must have been 100 fluorescent bulbs. Jessica squinted and raised a hand to shade her eyes. The enormous, smiling face of a little girl stared down at her, glowing neon against the night sky. She was made up to look like a clown. Her face was painted white, and her cheeks were marked with round, pink circles, her nose a matching triangle. Her bright orange hair was tied up in 2 pigtails on either side of her head, and beside her were fat, red letters outlined in yellow. Jessica peered at the backward sign for a moment before the letters made sense. Circus Baby's Pizza. The glare of the light began to hurt her eyes, and she looked away, then ran toward the dark building at the edge of the lot, blinking to get the afterimage of the neon sign out of her head. She stumbled through a row of hedges to press into a white brick wall, which seemed brand new. She lowered her hand from her face, her eyes adjusted to the light, and she saw a long row of tall, vertical windows along the face of the wall. She went to the nearest one and pressed her face to the glass, but the tint was too dark to see even a shadow of what lay behind it. Jessica gave up on the windows and walked quickly to the back of the building, keeping close to the brick wall. The neon whites and reds faded as Jessica made her way around back, sinking into darkness. There was more parking in the back, though it, too, was unoccupied. A single bulb flickered above a plain metal door, throwing off a sickly yellow color, which seemed to stick to everything. Trash cans lined the wall, and 2 dumpsters enclosed the small area, shielding the door from outside view. Jessica crept toward the door, careful not to step on anything. She gave it a gentle pull, but it was sealed shut. She balanced against the frame as she pushed herself up onto her toes and grinned. She could see inside. Inside was a dimly lit room. Charlie was there. She was in profile, talking to someone just beyond Jessica's view, though she could not hear either voice. Jessica inched along the ridge, trying to see the other person, but all she could make out was the blur of movement as someone gestured. After a few minutes, her calves began to ache, and she eased herself back down off her toes and flexed her feet. She sighed and pushed herself up on her toes again, then pressed her face closer, cupping a hand over her eyes to block the outside light. It was no use. The room was empty, or at least the light had gone off. Jessica stepped back and reluctantly turned to find another place to peer inside, then screamed, slapping a hand over her mouth, though she was too late to stifle the sound. Charlie smiled.
"Jessica," she said innocently, "you should have told me you were coming here. You could have ridden with me."
"Right, well, I ran outside to catch you, but you'd already left."
Jessica stepped back, her heart racing. Every fiber of her being was telling her to run, but she knew she would never make it past the imposter who stood before her.
"Do you want to come in?" Charlie asked, still speaking like they were friends.
"Yeah, I'd love to. I just couldn't find the door."
Jessica gestured back toward the parking lot. Charlie nodded.
"It's on the other side," she said, taking a step closer.
Jessica stepped back again.
"What brings you here anyway?"
Jessica asked, trying to sound calm. "Does she not know that I know? Will she let me leave if I play along?"
"I can show you," Charlie said.
Jessica kept her face blank. Her muscles were so tense they were beginning to fatigue, and she breathed in deeply, trying to relax. But Jessica was suddenly aware that Charlie was steering her closer to a wall where she would be pinned.
"It's late, though. I should get going," Jessica said, making herself smile.
"It's not late," Charlie protested, gazing at the sky.
Jessica hesitated, grasping for an excuse, and Charlie's eyes darted back to Jessica as she took another step forward. She was close enough for Jessica to feel her breath on her skin, but Charlie was not breathing. Charlie smiled broadly, and Jessica drew back, her head pressing painfully into the brick wall. Charlie's smile grew wider and wider, elongating impossibly. Then suddenly her lips were split at the middle as a wide seam appeared, bisecting her face from top to bottom. Jessica shrank back, curling in on herself instinctually, and as she did, Charlie seemed to grow taller, her limbs segmenting at the joints like a movable doll. Her features slowly paled and faded away, replaced by the iridescent, clown-painted metal face they had just been able to make out in Clay's pictures.
"Do you like my new look?" Charlie asked, her voice still soft and human.
Jessica inhaled shudderingly, afraid to speak. The creature Charlie had become looked at her searchingly. For an instant, an acrid, chemical scent filled the air. Then Charlie moved swiftly toward Jessica, and the world went dark. Chapter 8.
"I can't see."
Jessica closed her eyes and opened them again, but the darkness remained. She tried again, realizing with a rising panic that she could not move. The air stank of something rotten, turning her stomach, and she forced herself to breathe deeply.
"I'll stop noticing it if I breathe."
She tried again to move, testing to see what was restraining her. She was confined in a sitting position. Her wrists were tied together behind her, her arms pulled uncomfortably around the back of a wooden chair, and her ankles bound to its legs. She pulled against the restraints, almost tipping the chair over as she struggled to free herself, but she could not break away. Then there was light. Jessica stopped moving. She blinked in the sudden brightness, her vision resolving. Charlie's imposter stood in the light of the window, revealed in her true form. She was undeniably an animatronic, but she was nothing like any other Jessica had ever seen. She was human size, the same size as Charlie, modeled on a human woman of sorts, her bifurcated face painted with rosy cheeks and a bright red nose, and her enormous, round eyes were rimmed with long, black lashes. She even had hair, two silky orange pigtails sprouting from the sides of her head, gleaming unnaturally in the light. Jessica couldn't tell what her hair was made of. She was wearing a red and white costume, or rather the metal segments of her body were painted to look like a costume. At her waist, a red skirt stuck out playfully. She was standing very still, and she was staring straight at Jessica. Jessica froze, afraid to breathe, but the creature just tilted her metal head to the side, watching. Her animatronic face looked familiar, but she still felt fuzzy and couldn't recall where she'd seen it.
"I don't suppose you'd give me a hand with these?"
Jessica lifted her feet the quarter inch the restraints would allow. The animatronic smiled.
"No, I don't suppose I would," she said, her voice alarmingly unchanged.
Jessica shrank back, revolted at the sound of her friend's voice coming from this singular new creature.
"Who are you?" Jessica asked. "I'm Charlie."
Jessica looked around the dimly lit room helplessly. Apart from the chair, the only object she could see was a gigantic, old-fashioned, coal-burning furnace with a warm orange glow emanating from the thin vents in its door.
"At least," the creature began, "part of me is Charlie."
She held her hand out in front of her, studying it. Jessica looked up, and suddenly it was Charlie standing in the light of the window, looking confused and innocent.
"It's strange," the animatronic said. "I have these memories. I know they don't belong to me, and yet, at the same time, they do."
She paused, and Jessica returned to wrestling with the knots.
"I know that they don't belong to me because I don't feel anything when they come to mind. They are just there, like a long road you walk on, lined with billboards of things happening somewhere else."
"Well, what do you feel?" Jessica muttered, trying to drag out the conversation as her survival instincts kicked in.
The animatronic girl's eyes darted toward her.
"I feel disappointment," she said, her voice growing more tense. "Desperation."
She looked out the window.
"A father's disappointment and a daughter's desperation," she whispered.
"Henry?"
Jessica gasped. The girl looked back at her.
"No, not Henry. He was more brilliant than Henry. I watched my father work from a distance, a great, great distance."
Her voice trailed off. Jessica waited for her to go on, half forgetting that she was trying to escape.
"I see everything clearly now," the animatronic continued. "But in my memories, things were much simpler, which made it so much more painful. Now I know that people are all fading, fragile, inconsequential. But when you are a child, your parents are everything. They are your world, and you don't know anything else. When you are a little girl, your father is your world. How tragic and miserable such an existence is."
Jessica felt a wave of dizziness and looked up to see that the animatronic now appeared as the clown again, but the image passed. Suddenly, it was Charlie in the light, but the moment's disruption in the illusion was enough to remind Jessica of where she was and that she had to get away. The animatronic girls stood beside the only window in the room. There was a door nearby. She was closer to it than the animatronic, not that she could count on outrunning her.
What else am I going to try?
Tentatively, keeping her eyes fixed on her captor, Jessica started working her wrists back and forth, trying to loosen the rope that held her. The girl watched, but did not move to stop her, so Jessica kept going.
That's the flaw, and the greatest sin of humanity, the girl said. You are born with none of your intelligence, but all of your heart, fully capable of feeling pain and torment, but with no power to understand. It opens you up to abuse, to neglect, to unimaginable pain. All you can do is feel. She studied her hands again. All you can do is feel, but never understand. What a sick power it is that you are given. The ropes only seemed to tighten as Jessica pulled at them, and Jessica felt tears of frustration pricking at her eyes. No wonder she doesn't care if I try to escape, she thought bitterly. If I could just see the knots. She stopped moving and took a deep breath, then closed her eyes. Find the knot. Ignore the robot. Jessica fumbled with her right hand, searching for the end of the knot, bending her wrist painfully. At last, she found the end of the rope and grasped it. The rope tightened, but she inched her fingers along until she came to the base of the knot, then began to carefully push the end of the rope up through the final loop. I wanted so desperately to have been the one on that stage, but it was always her. All of his love went into her. You're talking about Afton.
Jessica stopped, and Charlie nodded confirmation.
William Afton never made anything with love,
Jessica snarled.
I should rip you in half.
Charlie's appearance flashed, the animatronic's face and body seeming to break, then reassemble in an instant. For a moment, her expression wavered, a vulnerability showing on her face, but she quickly collected herself. She was his obsession. The animatronic twisted her hair around her fingers.
He worked on her day and night, the clown baby with bright orange pigtails, petite enough to be sweet and approachable, but large enough to swallow you whole. She laughed.
Jessica pulled the rope a last time. She had managed to undo the first knot. Breathing heavily with the effort, Jessica opened her eyes. The animatronic had not moved from the window. She seemed still to be watching with a kind of amused interest. Jessica gritted her teeth and closed her eyes and started on the next knot.
I wanted to be her, the girl whispered. The focus of his attention, the center of his world.
You're delusional, Jessica snickered as she struggled with the rope, trying to keep her distracted. You're a robot. You're not his child.
The animatronic pulled a chair away from the wall and sat with a pained expression.
One night, I snuck out of bed to see her. I'd been told not to 100 times. I pulled the sheet away. She was gleaming bright, beautiful, standing over me. She had happy red cheeks and a lovely red dress.
Jessica paused in her work, confused.
Who is she talking about? It's odd, because I remember looking down at the little girl as well. It's strange seeing through both sets of eyes now. But as I said, one is no more than a data tape, a record of my first capture, my first kill.
The animatronic's eyes flared bright in the darkness.
The little girl approached me and pulled the sheet away. I felt nothing. It's no more than a record of what happened. But there is feeling. My feeling as I pulled the sheet away,
and stood in awe before this creature my father loved, this daughter he had made for himself. The daughter who was better than me, the daughter he wished I had been. I wanted to be her so badly. Charlie's appearance faded, revealing the painted clown, and Jessica sighed as a wave of nausea and dizziness passed over her again. So, I did what I was built to do, the girl said, and stopped talking. The room was silent. When the last knot slipped loose and the rope fell to the floor, Jessica's eyes popped open in surprise. She leaned forward, moving her numb, tingling arms down to her ankles as she watched the girl, who simply continued to observe her. Jessica undid the knots that held her ankles quickly. They were looser, done carelessly, and she put her feet flat on the floor, her stomach fluttering. Time to run. Jessica ran for the door, propelling her wobbly knees and sore ankles through sheer force of will. There was no sound from behind her. She's going to be right behind me, she thought wildly as she reached the door and turned the knob. She yanked it open with overflowing relief and screamed. Close enough to touch was a mottled face, swollen and misshapen. The skin looked too thin, and the bloodshot eyes, staring angrily at her, quivered as if they were about to burst. Jessica jerked away, stumbling back into the room. Her eyes darted to his neck, where two rusting lengths of metal protruded from his skin. He stank of mold. The furry suit he wore was covered in it, turning the cloth green. Though as Jessica took in the whole of him, she knew it had once been yellow.
Springtrap, she breathed, her voice shaky, and his lips twitched into something that might have been a smile.
Jessica ran to the chair she'd been tied to, putting it between them as if it would do any good. Then horribly, Springtrap began to laugh. Jessica tensed, grasping the chair's wooden back, ready to defend herself. But Springtrap just kept laughing, not moving from the spot where he stood. He cackled on and on, rising to an impossible pitch. Then he broke off abruptly, his eyes snapping to Jessica. He shuffled closer. Then, inexplicably, he began to caper in a grotesque dance as he sang in a thin, unsteady voice.
Oh, Jessica's been caught. Oh, Jessica, she fought. But now she's going to die. Oh, my.
Jessica glanced at the animatronic girl in the corner, who looked away as though disgusted. Springtrap danced closer, circling Jessica as he repeated the verse, and she hefted the chair between them, watching for a chance to strike. Jessica tripped over her own feet, trying to get out of his way. Even for him, this is insane. He danced closer and away, the words he sang degenerating into syllables of nonsense, interrupted by maniacal laughter. Jessica held the chair steady, ready to swing it. Suddenly, Springtrap froze in place. Jessica's arms wavered, and she set the chair down with a thud. Springtrap didn't move. Even his face was completely motionless, like someone turned him off. She had barely finished the thought when his whole body went limp, collapsing on the floor with a clatter. He flickered, then Springtrap faded away, leaving in his place a blank, segmented doll. Jessica whirled to look at the animatronic girl. She was still watching without expression.
Enough theatrics, a rasping male voice came from the open door. Jessica, isn't it? The voice wheezed.
She squinted, unable to make out anything in the dim light.
I know that voice, she said slowly.
There was a whirring sound coming from the doorway,
and soon Jessica could see something roll into the room, an automated wheelchair of some sort. He was dressed in what looked like white silk pajamas and a black robe of the same cloth, covering him from chin to toe, black leather slippers on his feet. Behind him, three IV bags hung from a wheeled stand, the tubes extending up under the sleeve of his pajama shirt. His head was bald, covered in ridged pink scars. Where there were no scars, there were strange pallets of plastic, molding, and metal, pressed into his head as though fused to it. He turned his head slightly, and Jessica saw that while one eye was perfectly normal, the other was simply missing. The gaping socket was dark and shot through with a thin steel rod that glinted in the light. He was painfully thin, the bones of his face visible, and as he gave Jessica a small, twisted smile, she saw tendons move like snakes beneath the surface of his skin. She had to fight to keep from retching.
"Do you know who I am?"
he asked.
"You're William Afton," Jessica thought, but she shook her head, and he sighed, a rattling sound.
"Come here," he said.
"I'll stay where I am," she said tightly.
"As you like."
He shifted his weight carefully, the wheelchair letting out a whir as it moved forward slowly. The animatronic girl started toward him, and he waved her off, but the gesture threw off his balance, and for a moment he appeared as though he might fall to the side, but he gripped the arm of the chair with a pained expression, righting himself.
"So what was the dance routine for?" Jessica asked loudly, and he looked at her as though surprised she was still there.
Then he raised his hands to the knot on his robe, his fingers struggling clumsily to undo it.
"I thought you might like to see me as I was. A familiar face," he said, and smirked.
He held up a small disc in his hand and clicked it on. The blank doll on the floor suddenly looked as it had a moment ago, with the bloodied, duplicate William Afton stuffed inside the rabbit suit.
"Time changes all things," he went on, clicking the disc off again. "As does pain. When I called myself Springtrap, I was ecstatic with power, delirious over my newfound strength. But pain changes all things, as does time."
He opened his robe to reveal his torso. At the center of his chest was a mass of twisted flesh, crossed with neat, diagonal lines of black stitching thread. Rippling out from the wound were the marks of the spring lock suit, some scarred over years before, and some scarcely healed, the skin a shiny, angry red. He raised a hand to the wad of stitches, careful not to touch it.
"Your friend inflicted this new wound," he said mildly, then bent his head slightly forward, calling her attention to his neck.
She took an involuntary step closer and gasped. His skin was gone, she thought at first, the innards of his neck laid open to the air. But the blood, he'd be dead. Jessica took a long, slow breath, feeling lightheaded as she tried to make sense of what she saw. The wound had been covered with something else, plastic, maybe. She could see where the surrounding skin had fused to it, healing red and ugly. Through the clear material, whatever it was, she could see his throat. She didn't know enough about anatomy to name the parts, but they were red and blue, blocks of muscle and strings of veins or tendons. Wedged in among them were things that never belonged inside a human body. Small scraps of metal embedded in the tissue. There were too many to count. The man moved, and they glinted in the light. Jessica gasped, and he wheezed, clearly struggling to breathe with his neck turned the way it was. Something caught her eye as he moved, and she leaned in closer. She was almost touching him now, and the smell was awful, a noxious perfume of disinfectant. She peered through the clear shield and saw it, a spring, its coils wrapped tightly around what looked like three veins, the sharp ends plunged deep into red muscle tissue. Jessica stepped back and almost tripped on the fallen mannequin that had been Springtrap. She kicked away the jumble of limbs, recovering her balance, and looked into the man's mutilated face again.
"Yeah, I know you. Didn't you used to be a mall guard?"
she said. His fists clenched, and his eyes darkened with fury.
"Spare me. Dave the guard was a character, one concocted on a moment's notice to play you for a fool, you and your friends. It was insulting. It doesn't take a great thespian to pretend to be an idiot night guard, as long as you can get around inconspicuously. I have not been inconspicuous for some time. It hardly matters now anyway, as this is all that's left of me."
His voice gargled with despair.
"Come sit with me, Jessica."
The animatronic girl dragged his IV stand with one hand, helping him back to a corner, where more medical devices and a reclining chair awaited. Jessica eyed the door, bracing herself to move, when the quiet was broken by what sounded like a child's scream in the distance.
"What was that?" Jessica said. "That sounded like a kid."
The man ignored her and settled back into the furnished chair. The animatronic girl busied herself with the machines around him, attaching electrodes to his bare scalp and checking the IV bags. A monitor began to beep at slightly irregular intervals, and he waved his hand.
"Turn that off. I can't stand the sound of it. Jessica, come closer."
"Stay alive. Play along," Jessica thought to herself as she warily picked up the chair she'd been tied to, carried it over to the man, and sat. Jessica trained her eyes on the animatronic girl as she strode across the room, gripped a handle, and pulled a long table straight out of the wall as if they were going to view a body in a morgue. Jessica clasped her hand over her mouth as fumes of oil and burning flesh washed over her. There was something lying on the table, covered with a plastic sheet. Jessica leaped up again and backed away.
"What is this? Who did you murder now?" she demanded.
"No one knew,"
William spurted, almost as though he was trying to laugh. The plastic crinkled. Something was moving inside.
"What have you done?" Jessica gasped.
The animatronic girl took a cotton ball from a bag nearby, wetted it from the bottle in her hand, and wiped it thoroughly up and down the metal fingers of one hand, then dropped it into a trash can at her feet. She took another piece of cotton and repeated the process, continuing over the surface of her hands and forearms up to her elbows. "She's sterilizing herself." Jessica turned to the man in the chair, keeping the girl in her peripheral gaze. Behind him, the animatronic girl was sterilizing a scalpel, using the same care she had taken with her hands.
"Here I thought you'd cheated death," Jessica said, almost feeling sorry for him.
"Oh, believe me, I have. You have only seen one fraction of what was done to me, the shrapnel that even dozens of surgeries, and I have had dozens, could not remove."
He slowly rolled up the sleeve of his pajama shirt, revealing two staves of metal embedded in his arm, both dotted with ragged pieces of gray rubber.
"Parts of that costume have become part of me.
The animatronic girl took what looked like a pair of scissors out of the drawer and began to swab them clean, dabbing gently along every surface.
But the fake blood.
Jessica closed her eyes, shaking her head. Charlie said that Clay found fake blood at Freddy's.
There was fake blood. You faked your death.
Afton coughed, and his eyes widened.
I assure you, I didn't fake anything. If your police friend found fake blood...
He took a steadying breath.
It wasn't mine. I bleed just like everyone else.
He finished and smiled, giving Jessica a moment to think before continuing.
I gave you a monster.
He gestured toward the collapsed doll that had been Springtrap.
But I assure you, I'm very miserably human.
He paused again, a surge of anger crossing his face.
My scalp was torn from my head when I escaped that costume. All but this piece here.
He touched the small patch where hair still grew.
Scraps of metal are interwoven through every part of my body that has not been replaced with artificial tissue. Every movement causes me unimaginable pain. Not moving is even worse.
I'm not going to feel sorry for you, Jessica said suddenly, braver than she felt.
Afton took a breath and stared at her blankly.
Do you believe that your pity will make any difference concerning what I do to you?
He asked with a steady tone. He tilted his head, leaning back as if taking a moment to relish the words. Then his face lost the glint of cunning.
I am simply telling you, so that you can help with what comes next, he said tiredly.
Jessica stood.
You want me to be impressed by how much you've survived and how much pain you're in. I don't care about you.
She approached William's chair, then crossed her arms, glaring down at him from above. She glanced at the animatronic girl, who seemed poised to intervene, a half-swabbed scalpel in her hand, but Afton gave a subtle shake of his hand toward her, waving her off, seeming to enjoy the exchange. Jessica bent closer.
William Afton, she said, there is nothing in this world that I care less about than your pain.
Another child's scream came from somewhere nearby, and Jessica straightened.
That was a little kid,
Jessica said, a heady rush of adrenaline surging through her. She felt suddenly forceful, like she had some control of the situation.
You're the one who's been kidnapping those kids, aren't you?
She demanded, and Afton smiled weakly.
I'm afraid those days are gone for me.
He laughed and looked fondly at the animatronic girl, who looked up at Jessica and smiled delicately. The girl straightened her posture and continued to stare. Jessica took a step back. All at once, the girl's stomach split open at the middle and out shot an enormous mass of wires and prongs. It reached its full extension and snapped open and shut with a steely clank. Jessica screamed, jumping back. The thing fell to the ground, then slowly recoiled back into the girl's stomach, which closed seamlessly. She smiled at Jessica, running her finger up and down the now invisible line of the opening. Jessica averted her eyes.
Baby, that's enough, Afton whispered.
Jessica came to attention, her panic suddenly washed over with confusion. She looked from the girl to Afton and back again.
Circus baby, she said,
suddenly recalling the sign outside the restaurant. The animatronic girl smiled wider, her face threatening to split in half.
You're not as cute as you are on the sign, Jessica said bitingly,
and the girl stopped smiling instantly,
turning her body toward Jessica like she was aiming a weapon. A high-pitched ringing rose all around them, and Jessica edged backward. That's her chip, Jessica thought, bracing as if for impact. The animatronic girl held out her arms,